How is your local library looking? Thriving? Surviving? Striving? Some libraries are finding it harder to get funding as local councils try to cut costs, but others are seeing opportunities in the digital age to connect more people than ever with knowledge and imagination and curiosity. Sarah Taylor is the library manager at Shoalhaven Libraries, which services the south coast of New South Wales. And Stuart Kells is a book trade historian and the author of The Library, A Catalogue of Wonders. Stuart and Sarah, welcome to Life Matters today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stuart, historically, what's been the social function of a library?
Well, the really important social function that libraries play now is relatively new. So if you go back to the sort of classical era, libraries were really that sort of traditional thing about scholarship and book preservation and that kind of thing.
And that was an elite thing, wasn't it?
It was, that's right. So the idea of the library as a sort of a municipal asset is a relatively modern one. Probably a post-war thing. And that's really sort of tuned up even in the last sort of 5 to 10 years. So libraries are playing an important function in social inclusion. So you can borrow not just books, but you can borrow a briefcase for a job interview, or you can, you know, get help for, really practical sort of things about how to participate in education, for example. I reckon that's a relatively new thing.
And they started out as very quiet, holy places with just the scratch of quill on manuscript, didn't they?
All of the keep quiet signs have now gone, and you're allowed to make noise in libraries. And there's all sorts of different kinds of users that are sort of sharing library spaces.
And we'll talk a little bit more about the modern day uses of the library. But Sarah, tell us about your introduction to the library world, because it was unusual, wasn't it?
I suppose so, yes. I came to Australia and was looking for a job. I'd previously been a tour guide driving trucks around Africa and South America. And so when I arrived in my local area, there was a job advert for somebody with a truck license who loved books, and that was me. And so I applied for the job, and I was the bookmobile driver for 7 years for
Shoalhaven Libraries. So you were basically the hero of small children in small towns. This enormous mobile library would rock up and just be a beautiful cave of books. How long has your mobile library been running, and what needs does it service in your area?
So we've had a mobile library service for over 50 years. 50 years next year is a 50-year anniversary. We are a really long local government area in New South Wales. We're 160k long. So we visit all the 49 villages and towns along the coast. We visit the retirement villages, preschools, schools, some really small communities who, particularly with our elderly population, maybe can't get to one of our physical branches. And it's a real community feel. We've actually just introduced another mobile library so we can do more outreach programs.
I remember the mobile library coming to our school as a child, and it was such a personal interaction. You would actually get to talk to a librarian who wasn't rushed off their feet running around a huge library. It was your time and your space, and you could access things that you never thought possible. Mm. Stuart, you travelled around the world on a library pilgrimage. Mm. What did you learn about libraries from all the different ones you visited with your family?
We visited a lot of old and new libraries, and we engaged with them in all sorts of different ways, partly places of history and rare books and that kind of thing, but also as family destinations. And we had a toddler, we had a one-year-old with us. So that's a really interesting way of testing the kind of accessibility of a library about, hey, when you show up with a one-year-old.
Yeah, and is there a change room?
That's right. Are they allowed in? We saw that people are investing in libraries, and so there's this wonderful sort of moment of library architecture and library renovation. But we also saw that people are closing libraries. So in the UK, for example, there have been hundreds of library closures, and this libraries are they're enjoying a moment, but it's a very contested moment. So you mentioned the sort of digital and analog clash, and that's really important. But there's also, a library is not a library without books, but a library is not a library without librarians. And there's this incredible tension almost an attempt to, reduce the role of librarians through things like deprofessionalizing library work, through engaging volunteers, and even thinking of, self-service libraries. And so it's a very contested space, I think, is what we found.
And with the defunding of libraries in the UK, the big guns like Zadie Smith and Neil Gaiman got to work writing to the papers and saying this is terrible. Has there been any relenting of that move?
Not really. There's been an incredible backlash led by writers and people in the community. Philip Pullman's another person in that frontier, Marjorie Blackman. But it's really bound up in that whole austerity drive, which is something that the national government over there has been championing. So there's been a very strong groundswell of support for libraries, but without the government coming to the table, it's difficult.
So the government sees libraries as something that we can do without as a society.
Well, that's really important. How do you measure the value of a library? Right, there's this sort of managerialist paradigm of inputs and outputs and outcomes. How do you actually manage? How do you measure the benefits of a library? But most of those benefits are intangible, they're diffused, they're complex, and so that kind of paradigm doesn't really suit how you measure the value of a library. And so it's easy to say these things are a municipal overhead and that, you know, that there's no kind of tangible value, whereas, you know, those authors you mentioned and others can see the value of libraries as pathways to participation and entry points to different kinds of careers, social inclusion. So there needs to be these kinds of, you know, stories that we're telling now about how you can capture some of those benefits.
And I'm sure you've got a story. You can head to our Facebook page and tell us what the value of libraries is to you or has been to you across your life. And you could also send us a text, 0418 226 576. We're speaking with Stuart Kells, who's a book trade historian, and his book's called The Library, A Catalogue of Wonders. And Sarah Taylor, the library manager at Shoalhaven Libraries, which services the south coast of New South Wales. As she said, a very, very long strip of land to visit with the mobile library and to service via regional libraries. Let's hear now how some people in Melbourne's Casey Cardinia service on the outskirts of the city use their local library. Life Matters producer Areej Noor reports.
But
I've just walked into a public library, and as you can tell, I'm not whispering, and I don't even feel bad about it. Public libraries these days are still a home for physical books, magazines and newspapers, but right now most people are here using the computers or sitting at desks studying and working from laptops. I should add, the weather isn't fabulous today, but the conversation class at Hampton Park Library is packed out.
A couple of them are like 76 years old, and one of them had a cataract done a couple of weeks back, but he's still here. So it's amazing. I have no clue how they do it, but all of them are here.
Ruth runs the English conversation class every week at Hampton Park Library in Melbourne's southeast, and says the library's perfectly placed to provide a space for the group.
It's pretty easy for a lot of them because they have kids around that go to school nearby, so they can drop their kids off and come in straight here. It's a close place. Apart from that, it has a lot of reading material for them to use, a lot of audiobooks that they find very helpful, and they get a lot of newspapers so they can read articles, and they socialize more than anything else, so they kind of enjoy it. They have different cultures, so it kind of works for everybody.
It's a rainy Melbourne morning, really cold, terrible weather, but there's a room full of people.
I was asking them earlier, like, why would they come in the rain, and why would they, you know, want to venture out when the winds are so crazy? But they just say they enjoy coming. I guess it's the company that they have with each other.
$150 each for the
men. My name is Helena. I learn English conversation. I want to speak English because I can't speak well, not good.
So what do you do in the class?
Learn grammar, reading, writing, and conversation, talk with friends.
Just outside the classroom, I walk past some people on the computers, and then I meet Pamela, who's sitting by the magazine area. She's been coming here for the last 30 years, even before it was a permanent library.
We had a bookmobile service just on a Thursday morning, but things developed and the school grew, another school appeared, and there were more and more students. So people wanted a library for their children to study in.
How often do you come to the public library here in Hampton Park?
At the present time, I'm coming in every day. There's lots more noise of children having a good time. The people singing and encourage the staff members encouraging the children to sing various songs, and that gets quite noisy. The children are playing with the toys, and I think the child aspect of it is the greatest difference. And overall, it's a noisier place. Not everybody likes that, but I think it's really good. And the high school students come in and they talk to each other and they're very friendly. They're all very friendly. If anybody uses the library and they recognise them outside the library, it's friendly. That it's like a club. They know them. I was telling you earlier about a man who I saw when I arrived at church, and I knew him from the library. So I stopped and said, "How are you? And what are you doing here? Do you always come here?" And we're quite good friends now.
So I've left Hampton Park and made my way over to another library in the area, also part of the Casey Cardinia Library Service. This is one of the newest and biggest libraries in the city and part of a bigger complex called Bunjil Place in Melbourne's southeast.
Hi, my name's Tim Cuthell. I'm the Children and Youth Librarian here at Bunjil Place Library. I've worked at a few different libraries around Melbourne, and at different branches, you know, you kind of meet demand. So if there's a lot of new families in an area, they need it, they'll double up on programs or do extra things. We also go and visit schools, primary schools, secondary schools, kindergartens, early learning centres, and we sort of get out of the library to educate and inform people about what we offer. So a lot of people don't know that we have all these programs. I mean, even though we're getting a lot of people through the door, there's a whole untapped community out there that's either they don't know what libraries are like in Australia. Perhaps they've had a bad experience elsewhere overseas. They might not know because they've never had to go to a library before because they've had books bought for them. And for other people, they're this kind of routine. They do this like they do going to the shopping centre. You know, they go and get the milk and they come to the library and they pick up their hold. So, you know, it really varies a great deal. But we try and really cater for the amount of people that we're getting through the door. And we're getting a lot of people, a lot more than we used to, I think.
This next library user is very good at returning books.
Hi, my name is Luke. And I come to drop off the books in the slots down the kids area.
What else do you do in the library? I heard that you sometimes do Lego Club and other things.
Yes, I do. In Lego Club, I like to build lots of inventions. I like being creative.
And is it pretty cool to be able to do that at the library?
Yeah, it is. I love all the programs.
My name's Samantha. I used to come to the library when it was in just over there, and it was much smaller, probably about a third or a quarter of the size. And then, yeah, I just started coming over since then. And the day it opened, I remember our whole family coming over and we were so excited.
And how do you use the library here?
I'm actually a teacher, so I'm very cheeky. I don't buy books, but I hold a lot. So I usually have up to, I think you're only allowed to have 75 holds at once, which I often exceed. But I am always, yeah, holding books, bringing them to my classrooms because the nature of my work is a relief teacher. So I have a new and cool and exciting book every time I go to a school. And I think it's really important that we do keep using books. And my colleagues even joke that, you know, I have half the library at my house. So, yeah, I'm always showing off how many books I have on my app.
And here's Pam again.
I can always say to anybody who doesn't use the library, go and join the library, they'll help you. They're not judgmental, they're not irritable or impatient. They really, really help you, and especially if you have problems getting onto the computer and learning to use the computer, they're really, really patient. I'll probably be here the day I die at some point. If not, I'll haunt it.
Thank you so much.
I would definitely visit a library that Pam was haunting. You're listening to Life Matters, and with us today are Sarah Taylor, who manages the Shoalhaven Regional Libraries, which services the south coast of New South Wales, and Stuart Kells, a book trade historian and author of the book The Library. Sarah, the ways that people use libraries have changed a lot. Tell us what changes you've seen over recent years.
I think the biggest change has probably been the availability of technology. So we have a lot more online resources. We have e-books, e-audiobooks, e-movies, e-magazines. So that's part of our collection that's changed. Books are still really very much at the centre of what we do. We also do a lot more outreach. So we go out into the community because a lot of people don't come to libraries and don't really understand what we do and maybe what services we offer. So we try and market ourselves and promote more. They're probably the biggest changes.
So you would have to be doing a fair bit of educating people about the technology that you've got too, the digital databases as opposed to the card catalogues and things like that. So the staff are doing a lot more different things, I imagine.
That's right. And that's probably one of the biggest changes for librarians and library technicians and library assistants is we've all had to adapt, which has been great because it's lovely working in an industry that's constantly changing. But we've had to become, technological assistance. So we have to stay current with technology. We have apps, we have downloadable resources. And also not always, but some of the people that use our libraries require that assistance. So they don't have the digital literacy necessary. So we run classes, we have drop-in sessions, and really that's, quite a large part of our jobs now.
And you run a lot more programs these days. And we heard a little bit in that story about the tension sometimes between the extra noise and the extra activity and the traditional use of libraries as quiet places of reflection and reading. What kinds of things can people participate in at Shoalhaven?
So we have early literacy is a really large part of our programming. So engaging with children from the very beginning, we have baby rhyme time, toddler time, story time. We also have a lovely program in partnership with Paws and Pet Therapy where dogs come into the library and the children who have difficulty reading can read to the dogs. It's called Paws Pet Therapy and it's Paws and Tails and it works really well. We also We do lots of different things. We partner with volunteers who want to just come in and share their knowledge. We have author talks, book readings. We have a lot of digital literacy classes. And really, we're happy to address whatever needs there are in the community and basically develop programs and services around that.
And Sarah, Stuart Kells mentioned earlier the spectre of the completely self-service library, and I don't think we want to see that. But I have also heard anecdotally from library staff that the self-service kiosks for checking out books can free them up to do other things. They find themselves able to do more community engagement work. How has that played out for you?
So we have self-check facilities at our three main branches. For us, we don't over promote them. We don't want to get to a stage where everyone just goes to a self-check and checks their own items out. I think it's nice to give people that option, but particularly in our regional areas and our smaller branches, a lot of the times the people who come into the library when they borrow their book, they want to have a chat with you. They might want to chat to you about what books you're reading, or even just, you might be the only person that they're going to talk to that day. So I think it has its place. And I think, yes, it can be really beneficial in freeing up staff time so we can develop other services. However, for Shoalhaven Libraries, we use it, but there's no plan to make it completely self-service. I don't think that would be what libraries are about, which are those community places and spaces.
And Sarah, I understand too that your library in particular, but I imagine libraries across the board can struggle to get a younger demographic in their teens and early 20s. Do you know why that demographic is dropping out of libraries?
I'm not sure. This is something we talk about at our library a lot. At our main branch, we actually have quite a lot of older children using the library, and they're using it as a study space. We have run programs, but they've not always been very popular. I just think there's other things that they want to do. And I think as long as they know the library's there for different parts of their life, when they're older and when they have children themselves and want to come in, I just think, yes, sometimes perhaps for the older kids, there's just other things to do. But as long as they know it's a resource and an information centre, then that's okay.
And Stuart Kells, loans per capita have been going down all around Australia over recent years. Spending on public libraries was sitting just under $50 a head a couple of years ago and falling proportionally. What's the future going to be like for public libraries? Is that a sustainable trend?
Well, as we've touched on, they're doing a lot more than just, you know, lending books out. Yeah, their spaces and visitation numbers are actually very, very high. You've got millions of people going to the State Library of Victoria, and, you know, very, very high rates of visitation in these regional libraries. So those stats don't tell the full story about, you know, use of internet and that kind of thing. I think the position of libraries is very good if we keep telling these stories. And there's some fascinating conversations online and on social media about libraries that really sort of demonstrate the power, the new power of librarians and the new power of the library world. And I'll give you two examples. One was this article that came out on in Forbes magazine last year about this idea that you could kind of replace public libraries because they're too expensive. You could replace them with Amazon and just get ebooks. And there was this incredible kind of response within 25 minutes from the library community saying, you know, that's ridiculous and here's a bunch of reasons why. And the article was sort of, you know, withdrawn and disavowed. And then there was this, talking about young people, there was this sort of innovator earlier this year who had this sort of light bulb moment, a bit like Uber, and said, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if we had this sort of service where you could kind of, someone could buy books and then other people could borrow them, look at them, and then sort of return them. And there was this amazing response from the internet saying, yeah, and we could call it a library and, you know, it could do other stuff as well. So I think the future of libraries is pretty good.
I'd love seeing those little free libraries pop up too. There are several where I live. Just, yeah, you know, bring a book, leave a book, take a book.
And so we've crafted this wonderful ethos of libraries about being, you know, these places of access and community. So the constituency who protect that that ethos is really strong.
Who are libraries for, Stuart? Because that's an ongoing debate, isn't it?
Well, if you think about those wider social functions, they're for all of us. They're for all of us when we're older or when we're learning. They're a new way to enter into a new culture. They're pathways to literacy and to social participation. But even if you don't use a library, you're still benefiting from those sorts of things because people get into the workforce and do productive things or, you know, build social capital so it's a better society. So even if you don't go anywhere near a library, you're still a beneficiary of those social functions and those economic functions. So the short answer is everyone.
And I guess some people think of libraries as having a materialist value. If you go in, you get knowledge and you can use the sum of that knowledge to go off and get particular jobs. But as a space to experience, they have huge value for a lot of people, don't they?
Yeah, that's a set of values that were really well understood in the classical era of libraries.
For a certain group of people.
Yeah, well, that's right. If you're lucky enough, libraries as part of the civic infrastructure. And there was a great forgetting of that and we're at risk with austerity and other things of forgetting again that, you know, if you want to have a well-functioning society and a community, you have civic infrastructure and part of that is the library.
Sarah, are you hopeful about the future of our public libraries?
Very, very much so. Yes, I just see, as Stuart was saying earlier, that there's lots of beautiful new buildings coming up with libraries. There's a lot of co-location, so joining services together. We continue to issue a lot of books, a lot of e-resources. We have great visitation and I see that across the library sector. And I think as well, there's just so many passionate people who work in libraries who really understand the value they provide to society. So, yeah, I think libraries they'll be here forever for sure and they'll just continue to grow.
It's really fascinating to hear that librarians, there's a Venn diagram of librarians and people on social media and there's a huge overlap in the middle. What's going on there?
Sorry, I don't understand.
Oh, Stuart was mentioning before how librarians are quite active on social media and they're using this technology. Is that something you've experienced, Sarah?
Most definitely. I think particularly because technology is such a large part of the library world now, we all have to be really digitally knowledgeable and savvy. And there's lots of Instagram and Twitter accounts where I follow lots of them. I've got one... my Twitter account is basically following other library professionals, and there's a lot of dialogue across the world really about libraries. So yeah, librarians are really active in that space for sure.
I've learnt a lot today, and now I'm going to go and Google marbled end papers on Instagram. Sarah Taylor and Stuart Kells, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Sarah Taylor is the Library Manager at Shoalhaven Libraries, which services the south coast of New South Wales. And Stuart Kells is a book trade historian and author of the book The Library, A Catalogue of Wonders.